From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Joe Dallas, author of the new book, Christians in a Cancel Culture, speaking with truth and grace in a hostile world. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Joe Dallas in their conversation.
Hank, I am not one to say, oh, let's do anything we can to avoid persecution. That's not the point. I think that persecution is inevitable to some degree. I accept that because that is a fact of life in this fallen world. But when we allow persecution, which limits our ability to do what we are commissioned to do, of course we should be speaking up rather than just sitting there passively letting it happen. I don't think there's any honor in persecution that could have been prevented. So if we are sitting here as American Christian citizens in particular, simply saying, well, I don't want to get my hands dirty with politics, I just want to pray and trust that everything's going to work out all right, I have to wonder, for heaven's sake, do you think there would have been an American Revolution if our ancestors had felt that way? So for all of those reasons, I think that we do have the greater horror, not just the horror of people acting up outrageously, that happens, but the horror of the people in authority saying, oh, that's okay with us, and the rest of us feeling like, well, if you're not going to defend us, we are at the mercy of the mob. Now what? That's what I call a horror story.
Yeah, I want to camp out on that for just a moment because you have a chapter in your book titled You've Been Starred. And I was thinking about that chapter title when I was reading a book called Sarah's Key. I don't know if you've ever read the book. There's also a movie out by the same name. But for people who don't know about this book or movie, this takes place in real history during World War II, where the French police, at the behest of the Nazis, are rounding up Jews in France and then ultimately sending them to Auschwitz. And you wonder, how is it possible for the French people to watch these Jews being rounded up and then do nothing? And the answer that is given is that these Jews have become not just unwanted, but they've been labeled dangerous. And once you make that transition, it becomes very easy to look on apathetically as someone is being sent to Auschwitz because they are a cancer, they're a danger. And you make the point, You've Been Starred, that's the chapter, you make the point in that chapter that a lot of similarities are going on in the cancel culture today. People are not just saying that Christianity is wrong, but that Christians are patently dangerous.
And that's how you get people either riled up against a group or indifferent to a group. Either one will serve your purposes. Nobody, Hank, is going to get excited about it if the forces in cancel culture say, oh, those Christians are stupid. Oh, those Christians are jerks. Oh, those Christians are ridiculous. Oh, well, who the heck cares if somebody's stupid or ridiculous or a jerk? You don't really want to take action against them. But if you can convince people that somebody is dangerous, now you've whipped them into action. I remember taking my son to watch Beauty and the Beast when that first came out way back in the early 90s, I believe it was. And there was a key scene where the villain Gaston wanted to whip the villagers up into attacking the beast, but in order to do it, he couldn't just say the beast is ugly. Who cares? So he had to make up this long narrative about how the beast is a predator who's going to come at night and attack your children and destroy the village. And based on that alone, he had the whole village going out with torches to invade the castle and kill the beast. Well, that's basically the same tactic we're seeing today. I'm not saying necessarily that cancel culture seeks to kill us. But what I am saying is it certainly seeks to kill our ability to communicate our message and thereby attempt to kill the message itself. And we're seeing this played out, as you said, in academia, certainly in social media, in the corporate and professional world. Now, it's already true that a number of law firms and medical establishments and psychiatric establishments will not accept graduate students from Christian universities because the Christian universities will have held to doctrines about family and sexuality that these firms are saying are no longer acceptable. College professors, university professors did brief, they faced unprecedented pressure to walk the line when they address issues of racism and gender and sexuality, and students as well who just want to graduate, who want to get their degree and move on and establish a career, they're put in a terrible situation if they hold the traditional viewpoint on these issues because on the one hand, they want to be able to be in an environment of a free exchange of ideas. On the other hand, they know darn well they are not in such an environment. And if they are found out to be conservative Christians, or for that matter, Orthodox Jews, why, they could find themselves unable to graduate with decent grades, or at least to be harassed. So for all of those reasons, I pointed out in that chapter, we are experiencing something similar to the starring of Jewish people. Because remember, Hank, the star is not just something that identified people as Jewish. It came to symbolize every negative thing Germans had been taught about Jewish people. So the indoctrination came before the starring. The propaganda machine had to convince German citizens that, hey, these Jewish people, and not only German citizens, occupied citizens of other countries, it had to convince them these Jewish people are dangerous. They're unclean. They are predatory. They're greedy. And many of the evils that you experience in life, why, they came from the Jews. And when people are taught that, then you start stripping away the rights of the Jews. People aren't going to be very excited about it. Either they will be glad you're doing it, or they will be indifferent to the Jews. And that is what we're seeing today. No, we are not being shipped off to concentration camps. No, at this time, we are not experiencing the horrible treatment the Jewish people received when Hitler took over. But what we are seeing is the limiting of the rights of citizens who hold traditional views, and only the most naive will believe that it's going to stop there. And again, my concern is not that you and I and all Christians have nice, comfortable lives, Hank. My concern is that we be able to do what we have been sent here to do. And so I want to work while it is yet day. And if I still have a voice as to how the culture operates, which I still do, and you do, we all do, I want to use that voice as a good steward of truth. And then, if we've been faithful, and we've done our part as the light of the world and as stewards of truth, and God still allows us to be in a position where the church basically has to go underground, well, then all right, so be it. But it will not have happened because of our passivity. It will have happened because of human evil. And God is basically saying, I will allow you to go through this dark time. There's honor in that, but there's not honor in the first.
You have some wonderful alliterations in your book. You talk about misrepresentation becoming mistreatment. And the example with respect to Christians are myriad. If you can call a Christian a bigot, a sexist, a misogynist, a deplorable, then ultimately the public will offer little resistance to Christians being maligned or canceled. You also have, though, an alliteration which takes in sort of the universal perspective, reproach and reward. And in essence, what you're talking about is that this life is a drop in the ocean of eternity. So reproach in this world is temporary, heaven is eternal, and to be reviled is just part of a disciple's life. I really appreciate that dual perspective. On the one hand, we're being misrepresented, and therefore there is persecution. And I don't think we gloss over that. I mean, 8 out of 10 people who are persecuted in the world today are Christian. There are over 300 million Christians being persecuted as we're doing this podcast. I've mentioned those statistics before, but they are glaring. When you think about it, 250 million Christians are being persecuted at this very moment. So this is a very real phenomenon. But if you cast this in light of eternity, then we get perspective.
I think that brings to mind the early apostles being beaten and actually rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer. Now, believe me, I say that carefully, Hank. I have never been beaten for the sake of Christ. I have no idea what these billions of believers are going through as we speak. So I don't know what I'm talking about, really, when I talk about persecution of that kind. But I have to keep in mind, I denied myself the chance to be reproached for the sake of Christ when I did that darn TV show with Joan Rivers, because what basically happened was I was reproached because I did a lousy job. I caved, I was vague, I just bungled the whole thing. So I didn't win any friends anyway.
Stay right here. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Joe Dallas. You've based your understanding of today's sensitive social issues on the Bible's truth. Mainstream culture not only sees these issues differently, but calls you bigoted for rejecting views they've deemed self-evident. So how do you witness Christ's love to those ready to write you off as hateful? Be sure to read Joe Dallas's new book, Christians in a Cancel Culture, Speaking with Truth and Grace in a Hostile World. To receive your copy, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More details Hank Hanegraaff's personal pilgrimage from his long defense of truth to his discovery that life matters more. Essentially two books in one, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. Part 2 explains why truth is necessary, but hardly sufficient. That the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We are created to experience life to the full through union with God in Christ. Is there more to the Christian life than what you are experiencing? Truth Matters, Life Matters More unveils the unexpected beauty of an authentic Christian life. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More for yourself or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us online at equip.org. You've based your understanding of today's sensitive social issues on the Bible's truth. Mainstream culture not only sees these issues differently, but calls you bigoted for rejecting views they've deemed self-evident. So how do you witness Christ's love to those who write you off as hateful? Christians in a Cancel Culture by Joe Dallas breaks down how you can speak wisdom about politically charged and personal subjects with equal parts compassion and conviction. This book will prepare you to stay true to the Bible's views on sin, salvation, racism, gender identity, homosexuality, and abortion, while teaching you how you can sustain relationships with those who feel threatened by God's truth. To receive Christians in a Cancel Culture, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org.
The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Joe Dallas as they continue their conversation.
I denied myself the chance to be reproached for the sake of Christ when I did that darn TV show with Joan Rivers, because what basically happened was I was reproached because I did a lousy job. But what a blessing it is, and I have experienced better in life, thank God, when you speak the truth and people despise you for it and you realize, okay, they have not rejected me. They have rejected the word of God, and I'm not going to get a martyr's complex, but I'm going to rejoice because I am in good company now with him who was taken outside the camp and bore our reproaches. And I think this is something we need to really lock into more in our thinking, Hank, is that if we are reproached for the sake of the truth, we are being given an incredible honor. Now, I do not say that we should sit there and allow ourselves to be persecuted if we can avoid it. But when it is unavoidable, and when even reproach, which is not necessarily persecution, even when that happens, I think we have to keep in mind we're accustomed in this country to kind of being on good terms with the world. I mean, the church and the world in America, the world has never been the church, I know that, but there's been a friendlier relationship, certainly. And so I don't think we've been prepared for hostility and opposition. And I think that has left many of us kind of like people who grew up in a neighborhood that was always nice. You could always leave the door unlocked. You could walk down the street at 2 a.m. Nobody would hurt you. And then the neighborhood changed, and it started getting more crowded, and more violent people moved in, and gangs started to show up, and all of a sudden you find that you're not safe in your own home anymore, and you're not used to that. You haven't a clue how to defend yourself. I think that's where we're sort of finding ourselves now. So now, more than ever, I think it's the age of the apologist. We are going to have to learn, all of us, to stop leaving apologetics to Hank Hanegraaff and CRI, but to understand that all of us can know the Word of God well enough to have a working knowledge of it and to defend the faith and to make a reasoned defense. I think that's our challenge today.
Joe, you mentioned just a moment ago the word hostility, and that's a word in one of your chapter titles. Chapter 5 is titled, Why the Hostility? And you do a wonderful job there, again, with alliteration. You have three C's, convenience, conscience, and conviction. I want to broach each one of those C's, convenience. Whenever truth is told, someone is going to be inconvenienced.
Well, that's always been true, hasn't it? I look at the Gospels and I see that when Jesus would speak truth, the truth he spoke became quite an inconvenience to the Pharisees, to the scribes, to people who did not want any challenge to their authority or to their error. And because of that, Jesus became quite an inconvenience. I think this will always be true, and it's certainly true today. We are an inconvenience, Hank. We didn't ask to start a fight. We really didn't. But there are movements today that are trying to convince the culture of what we all should believe. The transgender movement, the gay rights movement, the pro-abortion movement, critical race theory and the movement to promote it, progressive Christianity. All of these movements are full of some very committed people and have some very committed organizations behind them. And you better believe they have a lot of very powerful politicians behind them as well. What's in the way of those movements? Us, the church, because we hold viewpoints at odds with the goals of those movements, and that makes us an inconvenience. And in a broader sense, I'd have to say this. One thing I think all these movements have in common is a desire for expanded government, and I'm not trying to get overtly political, just realistic. if you want an expanded government, you are going to fall in love with all of these identity movements, because all of these identity movements call for government support. They call for bureaucracies, for investigative bodies, for cases going before court, for more attorneys, for more education in the schools, for more bureaucracies to see that the education happens, for corporate training and intervention. So anybody who wants expanded government, my goodness, they're going to love all of these movements, because these movements look to the government and say, we have an agenda, enforce our agenda. And I thoroughly believe, Hank, that plenty of politicians who do not even really believe that a man can become a woman, or that an unborn child is not an unborn child, or that men and men can form a sexual relationship every bit as honorable and as healthy as one formed by a man and a woman. I think plenty of people are giving lip service to those movements who don't even believe in them, but the movements are certainly convenient to the goal of people who want expanded government, whereas a healthy church is no friend of big government, because in a healthy church, our allegiance will only be to God. We're not troublemakers. We're not trying to be anything other than good citizens. However, no, we will not bow when the king rings the bell. We will not say that Caesar is Lord. We will not swear our allegiance to anyone but God, and we will not bend the knee when the government tells us to give lip service to basic moral beliefs and principles that we cannot give lip service to, which means that we become an inconvenience. So that's one of the reasons I believe there's hostility, is the convenience factor.
You also talk about conscience, and I'm reading from your book right now, and this is what you say. Whenever I see people lashing out against voices echoing a truth that they want to repress, I can't help thinking about Stephen's hostile audience, the adulterous woman's guilty accusers, or, and you elaborate on this in the book, Poe's tortured, terrified killer, the role of conscience.
Yeah, it was kind of fun to get to talk about the telltale heart, Hank. I hate to admit it, but the first full book I ever read as a child was The Selected Works of Edgar Allan Poe. I don't know what that says about me, but it says something. But I was always struck by that story. The Telltale Heart, of course, is a cautionary tale about a man who committed a grisly murder, and his own conscience was testifying against him when the police came to ask him a few questions about the person who had been killed. He mistakenly thought he heard that person's heart beating under the floorboards where he had buried the body. And he thought that the police also heard the heartbeat, but they were mocking him by pretending not to hear it. And so he finally, on his own, ripped up the floorboards and said, stop this game. I admit it. I killed the man. Here's the body. All because of his wounded conscience. Now, in a, I guess, more redemptive narrative, when Stephen preached, we know that many of the men who heard him were, according to Luke, pierced to the conscience, pricked in their conscience, because he basically pulled out the law of Moses and the history of the Jewish people, and he showed them that by their own standards, they were guilty of the blood of the Messiah. When Jesus came to the aid of a woman caught in adultery, he basically said, of course, you can put her to death, just as long as you yourself have no sin in your own life. And it looks as though he did start enumerating on their sins, and one by one they left. Here's the point. When my conscience is bothering me, Hank, I have a choice. Listen to it and conform to what it says I should do, or silence it. The problem is, if I'm trying to silence my conscience and you come along and you start verbalizing what my conscience is trying to say to me, now not only is my conscience my enemy, you are my enemy. And that is exactly why I think many people are so committed to silencing the Christian voice. I got to say, especially on sexual issues, not just on sexual issues, I know, but I think that there is such a thing as God-given intuitive consciousness. I think intuitively there are things we know, even as non-believers, a sense of right or wrong. It doesn't mean that we are saved, but it means that we have a sense that some things are right, wrong, normal, and abnormal. And I'll just say it plainly. I think we intuitively know, Hank, that when a woman is carrying a child, that's a child. I think intuitively we become gentler in her presence. We become deferential. We become protective. I think that we know if you are born with male anatomy, that is what you are, and that is what you will continue to be no matter what you do surgically to yourself. The DNA is still going to say exactly what was said when you were born. It's a boy. I think we know that, and I think when we try to push that down, as I did myself, I think that that's when we start seeing people as enemies, because when I was trying to adopt a gay identity and when I was trying to live out my life as a quote-unquote gay Christian back in the late 70s, early 80s, my own conscience was testifying against me. And whenever anybody would come to me and say, Joe, are you sure this is right? That person became my enemy. Of course I lashed out.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Joe Dallas, author of the new book, Christians in a Cancel Culture, Speaking with Truth and Grace in a Hostile World. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you Joe Dallas's book, Christians in a Cancel Culture, Speaking with Truth and Grace in a Hostile World. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more.
You've based your understanding of today's sensitive social issues on the Bible's truth. Mainstream culture not only sees these issues differently, but calls you bigoted for rejecting views they've deemed self-evident. So how do you witness Christ's love to those who write you off as hateful? Christians in a Cancel Culture by Joe Dallas breaks down how you can speak wisdom about politically charged and personal subjects with equal parts compassion and conviction. This book will prepare you to stay true to the Bible's views on sin, salvation, racism, gender identity, homosexuality, and abortion, while teaching you how you can sustain relationships with those who feel threatened by God's truth. To receive Christians in a Cancel Culture, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org.